Kamkartayantim lalalalama.
Kamkartayantim lalalalama.
Asevita Sri Charanaya Drishta.
Asevita Sri Charanaya Drishta.
Vatsam Manorucha Padasvasara. Konanu Manyeta Buddho Biyatam. Asevita Sri Charanai.
Asevita Sri Charanai.
By those who have not worshipped the feet of Lakshmi.
By those who have not worshipped the feet of Lakshmi.
Adrishtam.
Adrishtam.
Not seen.
Not seen.
Vatsam.
Vatsam.
Beloved daughter.
Beloved daughter.
Mano of Swayambhuva
Manu,
Uchapada
of
Uttanapad,
Swasaram,
sister, ka,
what,
na anumanyeta,
would not welcome.
Buddha,
wise man,
Abhyatam, who has come of her own accord. Okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to turn this thing off here because it's only me. Okay. Translation. What wise man would not welcome her, the very ornament of womanhood, the beloved daughter of Swayambhuva Manu and sister of Uttanapad? Those who have not worshipped the gracious feet of the goddess of fortune cannot even perceive her. Yet she has come of her own accord to seek my hand. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Kardama Muni praised the beauty and qualification of Devahuti in different ways. Devahuti was actually the ornament of all ornamented beautiful girls. A girl becomes beautiful by putting ornaments on her body. But Devahuti was more beautiful than the ornaments. She was considered the ornament of the ornamented beautiful girls. Demigods and Gandharvas were attracted by her beauty. Kardama Muni, although a great sage, was not a denizen of the heavenly planets. But it is mentioned in the previous verse that Vishvavasu, who came from heaven, was also attracted by the beauty of Devahuti. Besides her personal beauty, she was the daughter of Emperor Swayambhuva and sister of King Uttanapad. Who could refuse the hand of such a girl? The verse again. Tam prarte antim lalana lalamam asevata shri charanaya adustam vatsam manor ucha padas vasaram konanu manyeta munho viyatam. What wise man would not welcome her, the very ornament of womanhood, the beloved daughter of Swayambhuva Manu and sister of Uttanapad? Those who have not worshipped the gracious feet of the goddess of fortune cannot even perceive her. Yet she has come of her own accord to seek my hand. Volume's okay? It's all right. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nera Vishesha Shunyavadi Vastyatya Deshatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasani Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakaptaribhyastakripa sindhubhya ivaja padidana bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Hare Krishna. So, yet another verse about the beauty, the desirability, attractiveness, and so on of Devahuti. From Kardama Muni. Sri Sri Radha Radhanath Sri Giri Govardhan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. So yet another verse. Yet another verse. We saw how some verses ago, perhaps it was even the previous chapter, but it was a little while ago, that Kardama Muni was glorifying Swayambhuva Manu in very, very sort of vivid and, well, you could say flattering ways, actually. Of course, to be the king, to have that sort of role in life, it is very important. Kardama Muni, he made it sound like Swayambhuva Manu was just the answer to all the problems of life, something like that. So it tended to look a little like flattery, although Prabhupada did not really describe it as such, but it was so enthusiastic that at least the question definitely arose in my mind. Well, you know what I thought in my sort of mildly political way? I thought, Kardama Muni knows why Swayambhuva Manu has come for the marriage of his daughter to him. And Kardama Muni really wants that. He's just really enthusiastic to marry Devahuti. And therefore he's making sure that he makes the best possible impression on the father, Swayambhuva Manu. At least my small mind started to think in those terms. Because, anyway, it just seemed to be a bit on the extreme side. Then, when Swayambhuva Manu responded, he also, not so much, but he also was very sort of, could we say, appreciative, like that. But then he got into urging Kardama Muni to accept Devahuti, and he presented different reasons, even a little bit of what we might call arm twisting. That if you don't marry her who has come to you sort of her own accord, then you may end up having to chase after someone in the future and sort of embarrass yourself by, you know, appealing to someone, won't you please marry me? Do me a favor and marry me. Anyway, like that, you remember, we read, there were a couple of verses like that. So Swayambhuva Manu was very directly applying pressure, actually, to Kardama Muni. And now Kardama Muni is responding in the same enthusiastic way. Maybe it's true even, I don't know, but true or not, he is super enthusiastic about Devahuti. You know, there's a saying, there's many a slip twixt cup and lip. Twixt means between. When you're lifting up your, you know, rooibos tea or something, you're lifting up the cup to place it on your lips and then drink it. Sometimes people drop it. You know? Yeah, these things happen sometimes. And even though, you know, you're practically there, the whole process of growing the rooibos tree, picking it, drying it, and packaging it, taking it to the shop, selling it, you buying it, bringing it home, and then cooking it up, now you're at the last point. But But sometimes it happens. Even when you're in a sort of, a situation, it's like, it's done. The deal is done. But sometimes it just at the last moment, something happens. And it all falls apart. Right at the last moment, these things happen. This material world, Krishna. These things definitely happen. So, he gets so much into it that he says, she is the very ornament of womanhood, which then Prabhupada explains as being that she was more beautiful than her ornaments. She had ornaments on, but she made them more attractive. As Prabhupada explains, generally a woman or a man, just generally a person. I mean, back in the good old days when I was young, men never used, smelly stuff or these types of things. Rings, earrings, completely out of the question. But anyway, the times have changed. And people wear ornaments to make themselves look better than what they really look. In fact, yes, they have their hair done, they may put makeup on the face. I saw the other day somewhere that there's now a phenomenon of men putting makeup on their faces. Yeah. So anyway, the whole idea is to make yourself look better than you really look. And, obviously the idea would be to impress someone and bewilder someone. And bewilder them. To think you're more than what you are. And who knows, maybe you'd be able to take advantage of them. But this point, that Devahuti was so beautiful that she made her ornaments look more beautiful, and the ornaments did not make her look more beautiful. This, the only time I've ever seen such a description, is in descriptions of Lord Krishna. That's the only other place I've seen, and maybe there are other cases of a person beautifying their ornaments. That's the only place I've seen it, that Lord Krishna wears ornaments, but they don't make him look beautiful. He makes them look beautiful. And actually, the ornaments are living entities. They're not just pieces of, different rocks which have some value attributed to them, colorful looking, and therefore they enhance your appearance. And they're not just rocks, they are living beings. And Krishna uses them because their service to him is to be worn by him. That's their service. But when he wears them, they don't enhance his beauty, he enhances their beauty. But he just wears, so you might wonder, why does he bother wearing them? Because they may sort of detract from his beauty. But he wears them because he knows it's their service, and he's engaging them in their service to him. Just like in the Damodar Leela, in the beginning of the Damodar Leela, when Mother Yashoda is churning the yogurt and simultaneously breastfeeding Krishna, then the milk inside just nearby, but inside. They were out in the courtyard. So the milk started boiling over, and she went to save it from being spoiled. And the explanation, description which is given, is that the milk is a devotee. The milk is a person. And the milk was watching Mother Yashoda breastfeed Krishna. And the milk was thinking, if Krishna drinks so much of her milk, he's going to become full. And then he will not engage me in his service by drinking me. So let me make it look like I'm boiling over, and then she'll come and stop me from boiling over, but in the process she'll stop breastfeeding him, and then I'll get a chance to be engaged in my service to the Lord by being drunk by him. So anyway, the point there is just that on the transcendental platform, particularly in the spiritual world, there's no such thing as dull matter. Everything is living. Everything is not a thing, but everything is a person, fully conscious and dedicated to serving Krishna completely, more than completely. So anyway, here though, Kadama Muni is praising the beauty of Devahuti. He didn't really need to do that. All he needed to do was tell Swayambhuva Manu, yes. but he's doing it in a very roundabout and very diplomatic type of way. So, yes, so it also makes one wonder. He is attributing to her such incredible beauty that otherwise, at least to my knowledge, such descriptions are only given of Lord Krishna himself. So how could she, a relatively ordinary woman with a material body, how could she, with her material body, made of earth, water, fire, air, and ether, how could her body be so beautiful it could compare to the body of Lord Krishna? Anyway, Prabhupada doesn't exactly address it in these terms, but the idea certainly enters the mind that maybe Kardama Muni has become a little carried away. Anyway, the last few days, the last so many days, it's been almost a little repetitive. Of course, Prabhupada said repetition of a good thing is good, but repetitive about the beauty of this woman and her desirability and how incredible it is in this way and that way and so many ways, and all different systems of marriage, wedding ceremony. I thought that we could, even though the verse and the purport too is focusing along those lines, I thought we could also maybe just look at a little different point, which is mentioned though, and it's a very important point. It's mentioned in the verse itself that Kardama Muni, in his extremely enthusiastic way, he is saying that Devahuti is so exceptional, just unbelievably exceptional, that a person cannot even see her unless they're blessed by the goddess of fortune. Or not just blessed even, well, blessed, but unless they worship the goddess of fortune. If the heaven worship the goddess of fortune, they will not have the capability to even perceive her. Phew, Hare Krishna. This is high level. This is really super high level. But there is an important point and principle there, and that is that blessings matter. Blessings matter. And the opposite of blessings, like, well, even curses, say, but bad feelings towards you, they also matter. These things matter. How many times do we read in Prabhupada's books of blessings in this way and that, and benedictions and so on? It's an important part of the whole picture of what is Krishna consciousness. And it's not only in Krishna consciousness, but in other traditions also, blessings are considered to be extremely important, and if you can get them well, you are very fortunate. You are really fortunate. Yes. So it's true. It's definitely true that, for example, the devotees here in Radharadhanath Temple and the followers of Srila Prabhupada, particularly, I mean, devotees you could say in general, but particularly the followers of Srila Prabhupada, have been blessed by Srila Prabhupada. They've received some mercy that Brahmanda Brahmate Kuna Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai Bhakti Lada Beach, that otherwise the living entities in this universe, they have been just wandering aimlessly. Well, not exactly aimlessly, but futilely. They have been wandering around the universe for many lifetimes. But then, by the mercy of Lord Krishna, when Lord Krishna sees that someone is sincere enough, then he allows them to meet devotees and in this way meet a spiritual master. Which certainly in our cases and even in a general sense means to be able to meet someone who's connected with Srila Prabhupada, even just amongst the devotees in general. And then, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, coming through his followers and coming just directly from him, through that mercy, through those blessings, the devotees' lives have changed so much. Just like we were reading last night in Nectar of Devotion, that we were reading. Yes. In the Nectar of Instruction, We were reading about the importance of accepting a spiritual master and the necessity, actually, of accepting a spiritual master. The particular point just escapes my mind. But anyway, the thing is that blessings are extremely important. Well, yeah, okay. So we were reading how Prabhupada was explaining, Srila Rupa Goswami presents two verses emphasizing the importance of initiation. Diksha Kale, actually I forget the whole verse, but at the time of initiation, a person becomes transformed And then Krishna accepts them as being equal to himself. So Srila Prabhupada was talking about that, and that how he has seen his experience is that people who came from all sorts of the wrong backgrounds became transformed through the process of devotional service, including initiation. Yeah, they became transformed, and they became like different people, better people, so much better people. In other words, blessings work. It's not a mechanical process. You just do step one, and then you do step two, and then you press button A, and then you get a certain result. But it's Krishna consciousness is always very personal. We are personalists. So, through the blessings, the mercy coming through parampara in different ways, the devotees' lives have changed, even drastically, radically changed. Prabhupada, there's a famous conversation of Srila Prabhupada's in which someone asks him, can you do miracles? Can you do miracles? Wanting, obviously, to hear if Prabhupada can do things like walk on water, bring the dead back to life. You know, it was a Christian or a white person from a Christian background. So he was interested if Prabhupada could do that sort of thing, like what Jesus is said to have done. And then Prabhupada pointed to his disciples. There were a few disciples also there in the room. And Prabhupada said, these are my miracles. Because previously, they were doing all sorts of other things. Wrong things. All sorts. But now they've changed. And they've given those things up. And they're living saintly lives. Dedicated to the service of Lord Krishna. Service of the Lord. Blessings, mercy. Therefore, through having that mercy, we, even though the devotees, even though coming from other backgrounds altogether, with no even what to speak of tendency, but not even awareness of what is Krishna consciousness, they're now appreciating the deities so much. How beautiful are the deities? They're appreciating how wonderful it is to chant Hare Krishna. How wonderful it is to render devotional services. Just amazingly wonderful. But other people, particularly like the real non-devotees, they because they haven't got that mercy, it's not just a matter of lack of information. Of course, they do lack information, but it's not just a matter of some ABC type of education. But because they haven't got that mercy, they haven't got those blessings, therefore, they can't appreciate. And we're doing this. Well, we're doing it right now. We're doing these things, broadcasting on these whatever you call them, social networks. And sometimes one of those people feels he must chip in a bit of advice. Make a comment, you're wasting your time, you're doing the wrong thing. But usually in much stronger language than that. And what can you do? These people think like that, they feel like that, because that's their condition, because they haven't got the mercy and the blessings to see things the way the devotees see them. And therefore, when they have some experience, some contact, maybe with deities or with chanting and just with devotees and Krishna consciousness in different ways, the staunch ones, they become angry. They don't just sort of excuse themselves and go away, but they become aggressively angry. And ultimately the reason is because they haven't got the blessings. They haven't got the mercy. Rather, they're stuck in some sort of heavy condition under the lower modes of material nature. And even though they've got some sort of religious tendency to some degree, but it's very limited. Just like we find when Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatana Goswami in the later part of the Madhya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the point is made, there's a whole discussion about recognizing the Lord, that staunch non-devotees, even when the Lord comes right in front of them and demonstrates how he is the Lord, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the staunch non-devotees, they cannot recognize. It's almost like the Lord could hardly do anything more to make it clear that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But still they can't recognize, and they maintain some nasty attitude. Just like classic example is Duryodhana, when just very shortly before the Battle of Kurukshetra, Lord Krishna came to try to make a last attempt to negotiate peace. He had already tried to negotiate peace, but unsuccessfully. Shall I change over now? Just a sec, devotees. This really takes seconds. And we are back in business. Look at that. Sorry. So, Duryodhana, yeah, Lord Krishna came. Oh, no, wait a minute. He's got to ask me to accept him. Here he is. Just now coming. Right, so, Duryodhana, Lord Krishna had already, attempts had already been made on a few occasions to negotiate peace and avoid the Battle of Kurukshetra unsuccessfully. But Krishna thought he'd make a last attempt, so he went to Hastinapur. And when Duryodhana became informed that Krishna's here, this is what he wants to do, Duryodhana, being a first-class rascal, and even actually Srila Prabhupada in one place says, an incarnation of the personality of Kali Yuga. Duryodhana, he said, oh no, not again, no, I'm not interested. And he told his soldiers, just arrest him. So they went to arrest him. And he was nearby watching, I mean Duryodhana. And then Lord Krishna manifested at least some version of his universal form. And the soldiers of Duryodhana were shocked. And they ran. It's just too overwhelming. We remember, of course, how Arjuna reacted when he saw the universal form. So they reacted similarly. They ran. And they ran back to Duryodhana and said, we can't arrest him. He's Vishnu. He's the Supreme Lord. But Duryodhana said, no, 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 no. He's not the Supreme Lord. He's just Krishna. I've known him for years. And Duryodhana said, you know, the thing is, he must have in his previous life done some very severe austerities, and now he's got some mystical powers. That was his conclusion, because he was lacking in blessings, having not received blessings much at all. But then, as the discussion goes on, Lord Chaitanya with Sanatana Goswami, then the point is made that for the devotees, even when the Lord tries to disguise himself, but they recognize him. Here is my Lord. They recognize him because they are devotees. Their hearts are in such a transcendental condition of Krishna consciousness, and that's because they received mercy and blessings. So Kardama Muni is applying this sort of point to Devahuti, that if you haven't worshipped the goddess of fortune, you're not going to be able to even see her. Maybe it'll be something like, well, I don't know, the king's new clothes, if you know that story. No, it'll be invisible to you. Others may see. Of course, nobody saw in that case, but that was the idea. That others, if you're qualified enough, you'll see. But if you're not qualified enough, you won't see. Anyway, you know that story. Aha. So this is what Kardama is saying. That if you don't have, if you haven't worshipped the goddess of fortune and got her mercy, then you won't be able to even see Devahuti. It's just, sure, amazing. But she has come of her own accord to me. What? How did that happen? Because, as Prabhupada mentions here, well, Devahuti is a member of demigod society as the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu. Higher level society, not just regular human society. Kardama Muni is sort of a regular human being. So it's so amazing that, you know, I'm not even a demigod. But she's coming to me, approaching me, asking me for some favor or even mercy or something like that. Yeah, to become my wife. How amazing. Yeah, so again, in different ways, Kardama Muni is expressing just, you know, such emotion. It's amazing, actually, and one wonders what's really going on in his mind. Maybe he's just trying to make sure that Swayambhuva Manu at the last moment will not think that, wait a minute, look at this guy, he's a pauper, he's less than a pauper, he's just totally penniless. He's a nice guy, but, you know, my daughter has been living in a certain way, and now she's going to have to live in a very different way, so just hold on there. Let us just have a quick meeting about this and discuss it further. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Any comment or question? Oh, yes.
Isn't the last time we talked about the prophet, who could refuse the hand of such a girl?
Right. Who could refuse the hand of such a girl? Yes, Prabhupada says, last sentence. And what's?
I was thinking of Arya Sarko, last time.
Okay.
How is not a very diplomatic. He was a swayman.
Right. That's good. He's very heavily swayed. He's swaying. The point was that, in case you didn't hear properly, that we can, Prabhupada says here at the end of the purport, who could refuse the hand of such a girl? And Jai Satchinandan Prabhu says, well, Haridas Thakur did. He did. Because of his Krishna consciousness. He did. He was approached by two ladies, very attractive. One was a professional prostitute, and the other was actually Maya Devi herself, who basically embodies all the attractiveness that can be found on the material level. But Haridas Thakur refused them. Not only did he refuse them, but he changed their minds. He changed them. He transformed them. He made the prostitute, who was deliberately trying to attract him by displaying herself in different ways, he made the prostitute into a strict renunciate devotee, pure devotee, actually. She took over his ashram, his little, you know, it was hardly an ashram, but just a little place where he was staying. And so he gave it to her, and she took over and continued with the same program as him. So what to speak of not being swayed by her beauty, because she was very beautiful. What to speak of not being swayed, but he swayed her, he changed her. Yeah. And then, of course, Maya Devi, she also tried to do the same thing. And she's even more beautiful, much more beautiful. But Haridas Thakur was, first of all, he was not affected. And then secondly, he actually influenced her. He actually influenced her to chant Hare Krishna. She, as the wife of Lord Shiva, was more inclined to chant the name of Lord Ram. But now she became influenced by Haridas Thakur to chant the name of Krishna. So she also changed, developed spiritually through his association. Thank you. Good one. Yes. One moment.
Manager, you speak of blessings and mercy. How do you identify someone who has qualified themselves, and how do you qualify themselves as mercy and blessings?
Okay. So we're talking about blessings and mercy. So how do you recognize someone who has received such blessings and mercy, and how do you get, how do you receive, right? That's the question. Well, you can recognize, if someone is a devotee in Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON, they got blessings. There are different levels, different amounts of blessings. Even there may be different types of blessings, but definitely anyone who's serving in Prabhupada's movement Particularly, I mean, you could say also, I mean, definitely to some degree it's true, particularly those who are actually living in the temple because it's just full time. It's full time devotional service the whole day. They don't have to go and work in some material job. They're, by the Lord's mercy and the devotee's mercy, they are able to engage 24 hours a day, you could say. That's special mercy. But otherwise, anyone who is practicing Krishna consciousness, particularly under Srila Prabhupada, has definitely got some mercy and blessings. Then, I mean, that's a sort of general answer. Then, you know, sometimes in some situations, devotees are trying to do some service and they're very successful. I remember when book distribution was just, it was really just beginning. It certainly hadn't become what it became over the few following years. But the devotees were getting into it, and they decided to have a marathon at Christmas time. And one devotee, I don't know if it was Rameshwar himself, but at least one devotee, he stayed out on the Christmas Eve. He stayed out late distributing books because he really wanted to distribute a lot of books. And then he came back at, I don't know if it was midnight or 11 o'clock, but he came back quite late by devotee standards. And he came back and he found the ashram was completely silent. There was not a sound. And he thought, oh, the devotees, they came back earlier. They're all asleep now. I must be quiet not to wake them up. And then he stepped into the actual ashram and found there was nobody there because they were all still out. And they only came back, some came back like for Mongol arati. And they came back with these stories like, wow, so many books distributed. I met this person and gosh, it was amazing. You get the idea. So that's some special mercy. They were not expecting it. Even in some cases, they weren't even desiring at least to do so many books. They hadn't even thought, would it be possible to distribute so many books? But suddenly they found they were distributing many more books than they even prayed to Krishna to be able to distribute. That's special mercy. On another hand, what's the verse? Anyway, there's one verse. Krishna says, when I really like someone, I take things away. Yasyaham anugrinami harishye tadanam shanai. Yeah, when I really like someone, I take things away. So also, if you find devotees, we're talking about devotees, in some extraordinary situation, even of difficulty, devotees who otherwise, you know, they're sincere devotees. They're sincere devotees. But now somehow, some situation has occurred in their life, I mean, apparently negative. That's also a form of mercy. It's also a form of mercy. It's a test from the Lord to be like an impetus for the devotee to really focus more deeply on their Krishna consciousness. So even though You know, well, there's, you've heard this term, a blessing in disguise. It may appear to be heavily disguised to the point that many people would think it's not a blessing. You know, it's an act of aggression against the devotee. The devotee is being, you know, punished or mistreated or something. But it's a blessing in disguise. And therefore, Queen Kunti prays, you know, she and her sons, the Pandavas, before the battle of Kurukshetra, they had been through many severe difficulties. But now, when she's offering her prayers, the difficulties are finished. The battle is finished. They won. The world is practically, literally at their disposal. So, you'd think it'd be a time for celebration. But she prays in the Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, chapter 8, verse, I think, 25, that let those calamities come again and again, because then we will see your lotus feet again and again. Through being sort of forced to take shelter, you could say, there's an impetus. Oh, we must take shelter here. And then she says, and then we don't have to see repeated birth and death when we see your lotus feet through going through calamity. And I remember when I was a new devotee, as I've said many times, I'm still a new devotee, less than 50 years. Today is the 48th anniversary, someone reminded me, of the day I saw Srila Prabhupada, first day I met devotees. And the first devotee was Prabhupada himself. So, yeah. Oh yeah, okay, got it. Thank you. By the mercy of the devotees. I mean, it really, it's a fact. It is really a fact. But there were a few of us who joined the temple at, you know, plus or minus the same time, within a couple of weeks of each other. There was a group of us, like about maybe six of us or so, who'd all joined within the last few weeks, moved into the temple. And there we were, and we would occasionally get together and just discuss, you know, how's it going and what's happening and so on like that. And then someone came up with this idea that we should pray to Krishna to show us our faults. Because we have many faults, but due to our conditioning, you know, often or even all the time or so much of the time, we cannot really see clearly many of our faults which are there. But just, you know, we're conditioned, we can't see them. So this devotee suggested, why don't we all pray to Krishna? Please be merciful. Show us our faults. So then we can improve. Yeah, we can change ourselves. Stop doing the faulty things. So we all agreed, yes, hey, that's a good idea. Some days later, one devotee came back. And when we had another such gathering, one devotee came back and said, you know, I prayed for a while like that, but I stopped. I stopped. Because Krishna was showing me too many things that were wrong with me. And I just couldn't deal with it. I became